Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify. Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Anthony's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, and Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing this week?
Good.
Doing good.
Very good.
We also did at the same time, nice.
Yeah. So, promote, extend, trade this week. I think this is another good one, if I do say so myself. And on this date back in 1962, the Beatles performed in front of a live BBC audience for the first time ever. So basically, it was their radio debut. And it's worth noting that at the time, the band consisted of John, Paul, George, and Pete Best. So noted from Complex to Queens fan Ringo Starr was not mentioned, was not there yet. So, in honor of the Beatles' radio debut, what Mets debuts are we going to promote, extend, or trade? First, we have Kaz Matsui's 2004 debut against the Braves. He went 3-for-3 with 2 doubles, a homer, 3 RBI, and 2 walks. Next, we have Colin McHugh's 2012 debut against the Rockies. He pitched 7 innings. He allowed 2 hits. He did not give up a run. He walked 1, and he struck out 9.
That was in Colorado, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
That's what I thought.
And the final one that we have here is Stephen Matz's 2015 debut, when he went 7 2/3 innings and allowed 2 earned runs on 5 hits. He walked 3, he struck out 6, and he went 3-for-3 with a double and drove in 4.
I think there are two conflicts you have to resolve in the last between McHugh and Matz, right? First, do you find the no-name prospect debuting and doing really well more intriguing, or are you more intrigued in the long-awaited top prospect finally making it?
Second, this is Colin Cowgill erasure, by the way.
Second, how much extra credit does McHugh get for doing that in Colorado, of all places?
How much extra credit does Matz have for having a cool grandpa?
So, I mean, that's a fair point as well.
That's probably my extent for precisely that reason, yes.
It's hard because all three of these are cool, like, in three different ways. Like you were saying, Matz is like the long-awaited guy, and he also got hits, and it was in the middle of a season where they went to the World Series.
Yeah.
And McHugh was like, I remember being like, who? And then he dominated in Colorado, and I was like, oh, okay. And then Matsui was like a hyped thing. Like, that was like a super big deal.
was a big deal for child, for me as a kid, Kaz Natsui. I remember thinking he was going to be so good.
It felt like a huge deal.
They have Reyes at second.
So sorry for
you. Later in the season. Yes.
Reyes started at second for him, and it didn't go well for anyone involved.
I think I'm
extending Matt's for sure, just for the hitting, like the all around game and how that season went. Like, I'm giving him credit for a season, which is kind of crappy, but I don't care. That was it was a fun part of that season. Like, it was a part of a World Series run season, and I remember that game like vividly.
He was also just filthy in those days.
Yeah, like early Matt's was
before everything started to go south. Like,
yeah.
Just great stuff.
Christ. So I have to admit, I wasn't into baseball yet for the Matsui debut, so that's the trade for me. McHugh or Mats, that's tough. I think I'm going to extend McHugh because, I mean, 2015 was great, and that Mets game was incredible, don't get me wrong. But those were some dark years for the Mets.
Yeah, that's true.
And McHugh came up out of nowhere. I was like, oh, this is fun. This guy will be cool. Of course, then they lost him on waivers, like, for reasons. Why they decided to... Wait, no, they didn't lose him on waivers. They traded him for Eric Young Jr., right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's somehow even worse.
Noted son of the Garden State, Eric Young Jr.
So this is all your fault then.
Eric Young has one walk-off career, or at least more than, maybe more than one. But I remember one walk-off home run, and McHugh has zero. So
check me.
Who's the real winner?
Can Colin McHugh switch hit?
I don't think so. I was annoyed when they threw away Colin McHugh for nothing.
Yeah,
he's gone on to have a nice little career. I mean, I don't know that he's still viable. The elbow injury's kind of caught up with him. But he had for someone who had basically no prospect pedigree, he put together a nice little 5-7 year run, roughly.
He has more of a career than some guys with prospect pedigree.
Absolutely. Yes. Did he get a World Series? I mean, it was with the Astros, of course, but did he get a ring? I think he did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd assume so. Wikipedia lists him as a World Series champion, so.
There we go.
Wikipedia's never wrong.
Hey, and also the Rays gave him almost $2 million this offseason. That probably means something. Or not. Who knows?
Honestly, that's my barometer for having like a meaningful career. Like, you could play like 2 days, but if you're a World Series champion...
Oh, fuck yeah.
Nothing else matters.
And he pitched in the postseason, too, for 2 games. So.
Yeah, he's had quite a career, Colin McHugh.
12 career wins. He's never had a negative WAR season. That's
a lot. He only has 12 career wins?
No, WAR. 12 career wins.
Okay. I was about to say, wait a minute.
He's 58-43 for his career. He's a decent little career.
I forgot
why the Mets decided that would have been useful pitching depth to have in 2015 or 2016 or 2017.
He wouldn't have become the Colin McHugh that he was with the Mets.
Yeah, he basically would have, said like, that insisted himself, on him throwing sinkers. And
yeah, I mean, that's true.
He would have continued being the Mets Colin McHugh, which is a, I don't know, probably like 30th. It's a 30 to 40, kind of in that range prospect. Yeah.
I see that being the Colin McHugh.
All right. So we have a major development regarding the 2021 season. I was going to actually, when I was doing planning here, I was going to start the episode this week by talking about how the schedule looked for all the different minor league affiliates. And as I was doing so, I was kind of browsing Twitter, and I saw a report by Jeff Passan that said that Major League Baseball was going to delay the start of the AAA season for about a month. Basically, AAA was going to start in April, and then everybody else was going to start until May. Well, now everybody is going to start in May. In lieu of the AAA season, they are going to be doing alternate sites, just like they did last year. Now, all things considered, the alternate sites pretty much are going to be what AAA would have been had it been operating in April. You know, you'll have your depth guys, keeping them in shape, keeping them ready. You'll have some of your more noteworthy prospects and farmhands, you know, all that intra-squad stuff going on instead of organized games. So really, it's not too big of a deal. But here's where things kind of get tricky. And obviously, Major League Baseball doesn't know what's going to happen either. So, you know, and obviously we don't, if they don't. But in that report, some executives said that they think that the whole alternate site concept is going to last past the first month of the season, into, you know, when the minors would actually start. And the idea is that the alternate site idea, it's more protected, I guess is the best word. You know, less people are coming and going. You have more control over COVID testing and protocols and all that kind of stuff. So if that's the case and those alternate sites last for more than just the first month of the season, that means obviously that certain players and certain prospects might not be rostered for the regular season for however long this kind of thing lasts, which would be pretty crazy. I mean, I don't want to say what's the point.
For the minors.
Yeah, in a way, I don't want to say like what's the point of a season if they're going to do something like this and extend it into, you know, and overlap it into the regular minor league season, because I don't want to take away, you know, all the actual guys that will be playing. But like, imagine if Ronnie Mauricio does not play in 2021 because he's at the alternate site again all season.
I mean, I do think it's worse. Like, I don't think any team would do that to their top prospects.
They're going to be obviously developing, but they'll be doing so out of the public's eye, you know, I can see where they're coming from in that it would be a more sterile environment.
I think that's the point.
Yeah, but I mean, imagine just like, all right, you know, this say the Brooklyn's, you know, we're going to go see Brooklyn and they're missing literally every single player who might be interesting. It kind of puts a damper on things.
Yeah, it's a little, seems to send a bit of an odd message if you ask me as well. Like, yeah, screw you guys. You can go risk, put yourselves at risk and play actual baseball because you don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're at the alternate site and then you're protected. That part, if you're one of those guys who's not at the alternate site, what are you thinking? Like, I just meet for the organization? Well, you're probably thinking that anyway, but it must be particularly demoralizing.
I mean, it doesn't seem too well thought out. So hopefully that means that it's not actually going to be implemented past, you know, the start of the minor league season. But at the same time, not being well thought out has never stopped Major League Baseball before, so I don't know.
Rob Manfred doing something stupid? Shocking.
I know, right? Who would have thought?
I mean, I don't think the idea of having an alternate site is bad in and of itself, but if you're still at a stage where you need an alternate site, right, they don't have a season.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, either.
I think there's a very easy case to not have a season anyway. For the minors. Yeah.
Either go all in or just don't do it. But trying to kind of wiggle wobble and tiptoe through things like that, it feels like nobody's benefiting. It's the players, you know, the fans are going out to see, you know, their favorite players and top prospects, or whatever. Well, they're missing now. So you're going to see the guys who are not particularly noteworthy. The players themselves, like Lucas, you're saying, like that, doesn't feel good for them, I'm sure. and just the organizations, they need to figure out what the hell they're going to be doing regarding all the COVID protocols and letting fans in and everything like that themselves without the benefit of having the top draws. It just seems like a weird situation.
So I'm reading the Passan article right now, and at the end, he says that it's likely the exact quote is, this incarnation of the alternate site is likelier to skew older major league veterans and ascendant prospects who are on the cusp of the major leagues. Low-level minor players plan to report to spring training towards the end of March, that I use the facilities and then go to the minor leagues. So I wonder if this alternate site is kind of like, if a team gets hit by COVID, you have two outfielders in working out that is quote-unquote under contract. You know what I mean? Like, Albert Almora might not go to AAA. He might go to the alternate site, like, if he doesn't make the team, for example. So I wonder if that's the type of thinking it is. Like, it's more about – it's not really about the minors as so much as it's about major league protection, and you have guys working out.
Definitely possible. I mean, it's just – this. It's a very important thing to figure out. And yes. Does not seem like it's particularly well figured out right now. And you have about 3 weeks.
I mean, we don't know the rules of the National League yet.
Yeah, that's also very true. I mean,
like, I don't think it's been, like, I think there's kind of reports that we're going to the league, the season with regular NL rules, like historical NL rules, I guess. But I don't think that's confirmed by anyone yet. Like, out and out, the negotiations are not happening, so.
I just don't understand. How is it possible for everything to be so inefficiently run, so bad, so poorly done?
Yeah. It's especially
just, it's mind-boggling. Capitalism.
Yeah. Just everything is terrible. Well, I mean, one thing that is not terrible is the fact that we do have spring training. Spring training has finally started. Baseball season is on the horizon. It's very encouraging.
Hooray.
So, obviously a bunch of top prospects and stuff were invited to spring training. So, for the next couple of weeks, we're just going to kind of follow their progress and, you know, see how they're doing. So first we'll look at pitchers first, and then we'll spend, after our break, we'll spend the rest of the time going over hitters, because I think that's going to be the more interesting conversation with all of the different hitters and everything. So, pitchers first, Franklin Quilome and Riley Gilliam, they both pitched an inning, and there's really nothing much to report on either one of them right now. Quilome was a scoreless inning, and Gilliam, he allowed 2 runs. He gave up a homer. That's gonna be what deterred the homers and just the hard contact that players are gonna either will make or won't make off of Gilliam is really gonna decide his fate, I guess, whether or not he's, you know, major league capable and will have an important role or just kind of a throwaway role.
It's only been like a week.
Yeah.
But he's had the most disappointing spring, I think, because you'd expect him to be someone who, like, if this is going to work, it should be working by now, probably, given what his draft profile was, what we've seen in the minors, and again, like 2 outings, so maybe he's still ramping up or whatever, but that he's struggling to that degree is a little worrying.
Next up is Sam McWilliams. He pitched 1 inning. He allowed a hit. He walked 1, and he struck out 2. And the strikeouts, you know, he is a guy that's going to strike guys out. But I didn't really realize. Like, I don't know if this is just because I went back and I saw some videos of him, and I just didn't realize the mechanics are, like, so bad.
It's different. Like, he changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Gary, Keith, and Ron were talking about it on the broadcast. He just like has no follow through. It's just—it's
really weird.
Yeah, it's like all
short
arm.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's he just strides, and it's not really even that big, deep of a stride. Just delivers the ball and does like a little like a ballerina pirouette.
It's Marcus Molina-esque.
It's not very repeatable. But no. For an inning at a time, I guess, he's not going to be a starter. So.
No. I mean, it works for him because obviously he's sitting in the low to win 90s. So, and tops out higher. So it's messy, but it works.
You would think with like a bigger frame like that, though, you'd want to get as much extension as you can. Like that's a big reason. Well, I guess now he's throwing 101 in spring, so it doesn't much matter. But early on, one of the big reasons DeGrom was successful is because he had such absurd extension down the mound. His fastball looks like it's a couple ticks faster.
Yeah, I went back and looked at some video of like some bigger pitchers to see. Is it just, you know, like, is this a thing that a lot of guys do? I kind of found it was hit or miss. About half of the guys that I was looking at, guys like Chris Young, Randy Johnson, Dylan Betances, the Dutch pitcher, Luc Van Mill, about half of them took, you know, just kind of a step and through and didn't really have much of a stride or follow through. And then the other half, you know, they did take deep strides. They had good follow through. So I guess it's just really no rhyme or reason to it. The tallness, you know, the height is not an impact on that or whatever. Next up, Thomas Zupacki. He pitched one inning. That we could not see. Well, no, your eyes just need to be better, Thomas.
Lord. That was like that was even worse than the old Vegas camera.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God.
The Vegas camera sucked, but at least you could tell what was going on.
He allowed one hit, he struck out one, and he hit a batter. But we heard reports that his fastball was basically where it was when I saw him in Columbia 2 years ago, you know, mid-90s, topping around 94. That's good because those kind of suspect, ambiguous reports that we got from the alternate site and full instructs that saying that he was sitting in like the high 80s and not really topping out much higher, either those reports are just dead wrong or it was something temporary and Zupacki worked past whatever it was and he's, you know, good to go again, which is encouraging.
The hype train is leaving the station. Get back on the Zupacki hype train. Let's go.
If we had a better, I don't even know what the right word would be. If we had a better vantage point of what he was doing, maybe we could have seen how the curveball is coming along, how the changeup was, how guys were reacting to it, the movement of it, but wasn't really in the cards. So we'll just have to wait for that for another day, I guess.
This, at least the reports of this, has gotten me interested in seeing him the next time he pitches in the in spring. I'm sure he's not going to, like, before I was, like, kind of out on him just because with the velo reports and stuff, you can't survive with that. But if he's throwing mid-90s again, then sign me up, put him in the bullpen. Like, put him in Syracuse's pen and let him throw.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a serious lack of lefty relief depth on this team as well.
And just cheap relievers in general.
We have Aaron Loop and Jerry Blevins, and that's about it.
Jerry Blevins should not be getting major league time in this fight, as much as I like Jerry Blevins.
Yeah, Tarpley.
Tarpley. That's, you know, just dominant names right there. Well, speaking of dominance, the last pitcher who pitched is Harold Gonzalez. And he threw an inning. He did not allow a run, and he struck out a batter. And so Zupacki, we heard reports that his velocity was back, which is good. And floating around the internet again were some reports about Gonzalez's velocity. And according to those reports, he was sitting 92 to 94, topping out at 96. And I can assure you, Harold Gonzalez is not topping out in the mid-90s.
Makes me think the gun's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Because I have trouble believing that one. Yeah. No offense, Harold.
I mean, he's like, what, 26 at this point? Or is he young? The point is, we've seen so much Harold, not a lot of room for growth physically, so it seems extremely unlikely that he found 5 miles of fastball velocity.
Especially when in Vegas, which they had pretty reliable radio reports, you know, the same thing. He was still sitting 89, 90, 91. So over the course of a year and a half, 2 years, whatever it's been, he didn't, like you said, didn't find massive velocity.
Press X to doubt.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. It sure would be nice, though, if he did, because that would be a major game changer for Harold, and yes. He is just so rootable. You like, want him to...
Look, if those velocity reports were real, we'd be hearing the same kind of little whispers about them before this, similar to what we heard about Sapucki's velocity, because some scout or some Met staffer would be talking to some scout buddy going gaga over, look, Harold's a real pitcher now, like a real prospect now. That's not happening.
Yeah, that's something that would people. I would assume people would be have trouble keeping their mouth shut about. So, yep.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, now let's look at how the Mets hitting prospects are doing in spring training. First up is Ronnie Mauricio, Mets top prospect. And in the first week of play, he is 3-for-8 with a strikeout. And the only real observation, I guess, I have on Mauricio right now is that, goddamn, he got big.
Hello, third base.
Absolutely.
Hello, right.
The size
field.
Of that lad.
Yeah, he got big. I'm very curious to see how that plays out over a season. Like, how his size, how he begins to handle it, because he's a kid still, and that's a new body he's learning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully with size comes power.
Yeah.
Power comes great responsibility.
Okay, now he's Spider-Man.
Also true.
I'm a little worried, I think. I mean, I'm generally the low guy on Mauricio, much as I was generally the low guy on Rosario, and I'm not bringing him as an example up to say, hey, look how smart I am. I'm saying that's a type of prospect I just don't like, where they have great physical tools, young for their level and holding their own, no plate discipline, swings at everything. Like, I feel like those flaws get amplified in this type of player, and they don't usually get resolved. And I'm a little concerned that Mauricio is now beginning his slide down the defensive spectrum before figuring any of that stuff out, right? Like, he was kind of in this valley where, all right, he could be a monstrous hitting shortstop, or he might just be a shortstop who doesn't hit so well, or he could hit really well and not play shortstop, or he could not hit well and not be a shortstop. And now he's moved over to that not a shortstop axis, right? And now he really needs to hit.
It basically strips away the floor.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's still a little too early to say that he can't play shortstop. I mean, He looks huge. Definitely looks huge. I did not see. I don't think I saw him play the field at all.
I don't think anything's from what I've seen. I can't remember the last time something's been hit to him because he's been at shortstop in the game. I literally don't remember a play he's made. So that's a good thing, I guess. Like, I'd rather if I remember them, it's probably bad.
You can't mess up if you don't get the ball hit to you.
Exactly.
But I mean, he was 6'3", 165. Let's say he put on 20 pounds, and it's all, we're not talking about bad pounds here. We're talking about, like, he's been working out, he's getting jacked. Even if you put on, like, 20 pounds of muscle, that's still 6'3", 185. That's not, like, a human blob or anything like that. You know, that's still in the spectrum where you can still be a pretty good shortstop. I think that the fact that he was never like traditional, like his tools as a shortstop were never, they were kind of weird because he didn't have the traditional tools that the best shortstops had. I mean, well, that didn't sound right, but like he was kind of not quick twitch fast and he kind of didn't have the best range and the best speed. So I think that the visual aspect of seeing this huge guy now looking like him, and you're going to say, oh, all that stuff is even worse now. But I think we really need to see, obviously we need to see what it looks like, but I want to see, you know, how it looks before we're going to say, well, he's definitely not a shortstop anymore, and he's going to move over to third.
I do want to say the dream is that he never plays shortstop for the Mets, because Francisco Lindor signs a 10-year deal and takes his position. That's so, like,
do you guys think maybe we're overreacting a little bit to having seen last time we saw him in any meaningful way, he was like literally a child.
Ken, that's exactly what's happening.
like a string bean.
Like he's growing because like he's a professional athlete who's
I still think he'd profile fine at third. The arm was always his best asset.
And, yeah, I think he goes to third.
Doesn't matter as much.
I think he goes to third more than second. I can't see him.
And as a third baseman, yeah, you have to hit, but like, there's enough, enough opportunities for defense to create value where maybe he doesn't need to be like a complete masher. So we'll see.
Alternatively, trade him for Jose Ramirez.
Sure. I'm not opposed to that. You still have time for that. You still have plenty of time for that.
Was he the one who just like violated COVID protocol?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Gotcha.
So his trade value is even more depressed now.
Gives the Indians an excuse to trade him, you know? We'll take that. We'll take that problematic dude off your hands. Yeah, no problem. Sure, just give us a second top 10 player in the same offseason. Yeah. Thanks, Cleveland.
I see nothing wrong with that. Well, all right. Well, speaking of third baseman, then let's look at one of the two big third basemen in camp, Mark Vientos. He went 1-for-4 with 4 walks and a strikeout. Obviously, these are spring training numbers. They don't really mean much, but it's encouraging to see so many walks and only one strikeout so far. Yep. In Colombia, 2019, he had a pretty poor walk rate. It was 4.8%, which is not good. No. And yeah, scouting wise, like you could really see that he was struggling against seeing the ball. And, you know, seeing the ball better is going to help you draw walks. So maybe he's improved the eye. It's, hopefully it's something that he's dedicated time to doing over the last year plus. It was a legitimate criticism of him that was really bad. So it would be nice to see if he's improved that somehow. Also getting some reps at first base. That's good. Honestly, I don't really think it means much. He is a fully capable third baseman at this point. Probably not really able to do that much else besides to play third or first. So if you got to get more time in the field and it's at first, so be it. And really, at the end of the day, it really can't hurt too much.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think they're going to end up sending, like, Batty, Mauricio, and Vientos all to the same spot.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense.
I think him getting reps at first is mostly in service of getting all three of them into a lineup together. So.
Yep.
And for me, I would rather see Batty in the field at third than Vientos in the field at third at this point of their respective minor league careers.
Agreed.
Also, another thing about his walks, and again, it doesn't really matter too much, but he does only have a single year of low A ball under his belt, and he's facing pitchers who are rusty, yes, but they are, for the most part, you know, bona fide major league guys, so it's good to see that he's doing well against guys who have a lot more experience than him.
He's definitely quietly interesting in the system.
Yes, absolutely.
He's someone that I don't think about a lot in terms of prospects, but
weirdly, he's a prospect fatigue guy at this point a little bit,
yeah,
at least for us. Maybe not on a certainly not on a national level, because most people aren't looking at the Mets as closely as we do. But for us, it's like we've been talking about Vientos for forever, it feels like.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say there's room to get on the hype train with me if you guys want to come aboard.
Hey, look, if he's running a 4-1 walk ratio in the first month of the minors, I will be on the hype train with you. Hell, if he's running a 1-2 walk to strikeout ratio, I'll be on that hype train.
I'd really like to see him just demolish a ball before hopping back on the train. That would be cool. Because with him, it's always going to be about the power, you know?
Mm-hmm. Next guy is a newcomer, Khalil Lee. And he, in his Mets debut here, his first week of playing in the Mets uniform, he went 0-6 with a walk and 3 strikeouts. And I know that word got around that he improved his swing, and I don't know if the Mets have been fooling around with it, or if he's just kind of reverting, or whatever the case may be, but the swing, or just rusty, needs to get back into the swing of things. It just looked really poor to me. Just everything, all the issues that we heard that he had with it, about keeping in sync and planting his feet early, and just his hand path not being that great. Like, just it all looked magnified, you know. Maybe it was
It's early.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't want to cut him off yet.
Oh no, definitely not. But he needs to. Those are the things that basically is that his swing can get pretty out of sync, as I think it has been this week in spring training, and that holds the hit tool back. And when the hit tool gets held back, the power doesn't manifest in game. And he's a guy that has plenty of power. And, you know, he's basically a speed power threat. Has he played the field at all?
He's been playing the corners mostly, which I found a little strange, but.
It is, because he's a center fielder by trade, so. And supposedly not too bad of one either.
I wonder if they're just kind of like, go out there, play right, who cares? Like, it's the seventh inning of a spring training game.
That's honestly true, of course, yeah.
Just go out there, play the field.
I wouldn't be surprised if the outfield was done the same way my softball's outfield is done, whoever gets to the position first.
Yes.
I was going to say, that it does sound like an organizational philosophy of the outfield. It's just get out there and go play somewhere. Like,
just pick a spot why, and stand there.
Yeah, that's why Michael Conforto and Yoenis Cespedes are, and Brendan Nimmo are center fielders.
He's someone to keep an eye on. I want to see how the swing, if it is something that he's reverting back to, if it's just him not facing live, like, actual pitching in over a year. Like, sure, he was in Puerto Rico for, like, 15 games, but that's not.
I mean, we got that one clip out of that Winter League game where he just demolished that baseball, yeah, and the swing looked great. But
so it's there. Like, the changes are something that he's working on. I just don't – maybe he needs to just keep – the reps need to keep building, you know?
Right.
was hoping. Next guy, Francisco Alvarez. He had a pretty quiet week. He went 0-for-3 with a strikeout. Have no input whatsoever.
Nope.
He's young.
Well, yes. I mean,
no, that's it. Like, that's really it. Yeah.
You'd like fully expect him to be overmatched at this level. I'm much more concerned with watching him play defense, which we've not seen really. So, whatever.
Yep.
Next up is the newest top, newest first round draft pick, Peter Armstrong. He laced a triple. We know that he has plus speed. I timed that hit first to, home to first at 4.02 seconds, which is plus plus for a left-handed hitter, which is awesome.
Wait, on the triple?
Yeah.
Yep.
It was a solid hit.
So off the base. He's taking a turn then.
Yes.
So you hit that over the right fielder's face. Or not
right.
face, but like over the right fielder. Sorry, face. you're getting a turn in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's not going to get a straight line.
Nope.
Yeah, it's pretty
good.
Cutting
that corner.
Mm-hmm. It was a nice swing too. Really turned inside pitch. Nice ball.
And the big thing with him is like his power is kind of questionable, but we definitely know, like he does have, pull side power, and that's a great example of what he is capable of doing. He could kind of smack the ball back up to center, opposite field, and then really turn on it when he's pulling it, like he did here. It was basically right off the base of the right field wall or just right off the dirt in front of it. Would have been a double minimum, you know, if the fielder hadn't dived and kind of missed it. And honestly, I think that he might have even had a chance for an inside.
I was going to say, yeah.
And by the time the ball's already kind of being recovered, he was a quarter of the way between second and third. So if he wants to go for it, I think it would have been close.
Maybe in a game you go for it, but in
I hope in the future that he is the kind of guy that takes risks like that because he's an exciting type of player, and that's just fun baseball.
That's the type of at-bat that you're like, oh, I see why he was a first-round pick. You know, like it's obviously the sample size of one at-bat, but lefty-lefty turning on an inside pitch and getting a stand-up triple out of it, like that's the good stuff.
Love to see it. And last but not least is the other third baseman, the other third big third baseman in camp, Brett Beatty. And Beatty went 2-for-4 with a double, and he struck out. And he showed very good opposite field power, which is, you know, I saw a lot of that in Kingsport. It looks like to me like he slimmed down a little bit. He seemed a little more athletic.
I was going to say that, yeah. He looks in pretty good shape.
Yeah. Definitely a good thing. It can't hurt. Honestly, if he's, you know, he was a guy in high school, which wasn't that long ago for him, that was a multi sports star, and he was a big basketball guy too. And if he could stay slim like he is now, maybe work on his, you know, athleticism a bit if he can. Like, could you see him being put in the outfield?
Sure.
I mean, the Mets are anybody in the. I mean, Dom Smith is in the outfield, so I mean, I guess anybody could. But
on a scale of 1 to J.D. Davis in left field.
Right.
Weird thing is, I feel like J.D. Davis's problem isn't entirely his athleticism. He just, like, can't track
a ball.
He
doesn't know how to do it.
He doesn't have the instincts to play major league.
He's certainly
outfield.
Not fleet of foot, but it's not like he's Ike Davis or something.
Did Ike ever play?
No.
Okay.
He's not Lucas Duda.
So that was a step too far even for the early 2010s.
But we all remember how bad Lucas Duda was in the outfield. And he was the one they chose to put in the outfield.
Noted outfielder Lucas Duda. Those are good old days. But yeah, Betty, he has looked pretty solid. Both physically and performance.
I like the swing.
I like the swing as well.
Those were, I mean, you know how Keith always rants about Conforto using the opposite field? Beatty's hits look like Conforto using the opposite field.
Just like taking what the pitcher's giving.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. And hitting it with authority. Like, that's very encouraging.
Yep. Yeah, it's just, he's going to go as far as how much contact he could actually make. Because I think he'll be able to hit the ball hard when he does. It's just the bat to ball stuff.
Mm-hmm. And him turning into a modern day kind of Adam Dunn, that's an amazing outcome if that's kind of how it goes down. If he's just never really able to hit enough to be, you know, a dependable, kind of reliable hitter, but he draws plenty of walks to make up for that, and obviously he has plenty of power. I would be thrilled with an outcome like that.
I mean, Adam Dunn at third base is a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah. Adam Dunn at third base is quite the player. Especially if he's just, he doesn't have to be a Gold Glover there, but like, if he's a solid third baseman, I'll take that.
If he's J.D. Davis.
Adam Dunn was a career 237, 364, 490 hitter.
I loved Adam Dunn so much.
That's
and
not
that
bad.
Includes,
That's
like,
not
the
bad
really...
at all.
No.
No, yeah. No, and that includes, you know, he was basically, yeah, some pretty rough years.
I mean, that's basically Brett Beatty's floor. That's the minimum.
yes, that's...
Adam Dunn hit 260 a few times, which obviously batting average is batting average, but that's higher than I would ever pinged Adam Dunn for.
Well, it's like Joey Gallo, like last year or 2 years ago, whatever, he hit like 280 or something.
Yeah, something. He had one batting average year. Gallo's hysterical.
But yeah, I mean,
he had 250 in 2019.
But Adam Dunn is maybe not the best, you know, guy, but that's the first guy that pops into my mind and probably a lot of people's minds in terms of like that kind of true outcomes guy where
Jay
the batting
Bruce
average is too. Jay Bruce, there you go. Well, I tried not to think about
Jay
Bruce.
I've made that comp before.
Yeah.
Bruce at third base, very good player.
I'll take that, yeah.
I like Adam Dunn better. don't like Jay Bruce.
but seriously, if he walks like he can, because I think he has good he has a good eye and he has the ability to like really drive the ball, he doesn't have to hit the ball every at bat to be a good player.
Honestly, you know who comes to mind when I see him swing the bat a little bit? Cool. Honestly, like Brandon Nimmo, like the same kind of uppercutty swing.
Yep.
I see it. I can see that.
I see a lot of
he looks like him a little bit too, like in his face.
And I think the problem, one of the things he's going to have to face is, you know, I don't know if he's ever going to be able to hit the ball up in the zone. Just looking at the angle of the swing,
he's a low ball golfer.
Yeah. So. Nimmo had the same problem, still has the same problem. A lot of it's going to, you know, a lot of his future is going to come down to how he deals with it. So.
Yeah, because Nimmo just doesn't swing at the pitch. So it
doesn't swing and dares pitchers to, you know, locate there and not miss, you know?
Yeah, because he'll just
if you miss 2 inches down, that's a dinger.
Yeah, and then if you don't miss, it's a walk because Nimmo is like a top three eye in the sport. Yeah. But like. So, like, if Beatty could
figure
that
out. Too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Freeman is also similar with that, where he doesn't hit the high pitch at all. And just takes it.
And as long as Beatty could, like, lay off that pitch and dare the pitchers to locate it right where he wants them to, then he could be fine. Nimmo's a good comp for him, actually. I like that.
I don't think he smiles as much, but... PCA, I think we're going to have a competition between their smiling and obviously Francisco Lindor.
Oh, yes.
All right, so that's pretty much everybody. And there's obviously other minor league farmhands that are in camp, but these are the top prospects. This is pretty much top prospect, like 1 through 9 in the system right now.
Mm-hmm.
So who is going to be your spring training dark horse? Basically, you know, our king of spring training. Who of these prospects, who do you think is going to be the most impressive? It doesn't necessarily have to be the guy that is, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the traditional king of spring training that he just hit the ball the best. But who is the guy that you guys think is going to open the most eyes or change the most minds or just kind of whatever, you know?
I think it's going to be Beatty, honestly.
Agreed.
Because I think he unfairly gets cast aside because that was the Matthew Allen draft. And granted, Matthew Allen is probably going to be very, very good. But he was a first-round pick for a reason, and I don't think people really talk about him a lot. And the swing has impressed me in the few at-bats I've seen him already. Like, you see it, and you're just like, I understand that he probably is going to be able to hit, you know?
Go ahead, sorry.
I was just saying, and, like, I feel like he kind of is by the wayside type guy in the system itself. Like, people don't really, especially because he showed up and then played and then COVID hit and he didn't play last year, like, in front of anyone. So we basically have, like, 2 months of data on him as, like, a major league prospect.
I also think there was a lot made of him being an older prep prospect. And ding. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure how much. That
ding, ding, ding.
Now that literally everybody has lost time and all of the top prospects, himself included, have had the same development for the last year of being at an alternate site, playing against, you know, varied talent. I think a lot of that gets washed away. Everybody's behind now.
Yeah.
For me, I'm assuming, Ken, that your Beatty is your dark horse as well.
I guess, yeah. I've liked how Mauricio swung a little bit.
His RBI single was nice. Poked it the other way, I think.
I would like, he's always had good feel to hit. I think if some power ends up making it in there, might kind of change the conversation people are going to be having about him.
If he starts hitting with power.
Yeah, if he shows, you know, say he takes somebody deep,
just really cranks
one. Bombs before, you know, going back down. Like, I think people might take the conversation might change from like athletic toolsy shortstop to more of like, okay, maybe this guy will be a hit power kind of corner guy. I don't know.
The weird thing about, because I was thinking about this when you mentioned the segment, I think in Slack, Steve, but like so many of these prospects are so young that like Alvarez looks kind of outmatched, and that's fine because he's facing guys who he shouldn't be facing yet, you know?
Mm-hmm. And like, has never played above the appy.
Exactly. Like, it's fine that he doesn't look amazing right now because he probably, if he did, then we'd be having a whole different conversation. Like,
it's
the reason
also
why.
Three at bats.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true too. And like, the reason why that PCA triple was something that popped out, I was just like, oh, that's like a lot of power early in spring when it's like real people pitching. You know, it's like he's never even had any experience. But, yeah, they're so young that like Beatty is the person that sticks out for me.
Lucas, who also wore Beatty.
I was going to go with Beatty. Like much.
Three Beatties.
Yeah, I mean, Nimmo is my boy. You know, and I agree that that Beatty has looked quite Nimmo-ish. So any outcome in that vein would be a plus. I mean, I don't want to, like we said already, Nimmo has a top three eye in the game, and you really should never comp any prospect to someone with a top three X in the game. But if he's Nimmo with a little less eye and a little more power, that's a great player as well.
Yeah, like the poor man's Brandon Nimmo is a hell of a player anyway. So,
Who are the two people with a better eye than Brandon Nimmo at this point?
Ken said one with Freeman.
No, Nimmo, and Batty all remind me of each other swing-wise.
But yeah. I'm saying, like, even Freeman's eye is really good.
Yeah, true. Let's find out.
I say like it's Votto and no one else almost, but I'm a fanboy.
What do you want to do?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly how you judge it.
To now?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's just go walk percentage.
Yeah, that's the easy way out to do it.
Brandon Nimmo is seventh.
In walk percentage?
Since 2018, yeah. Because I don't think he walked as much in 2020.
I mean, there's also
he went down to 14%.
Turn his neck.
He walked the most.
That's also true, yes.
He walked the most that year. 18%.
Huh. But yeah, Grandal, Muncy, Santana, Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout.
So, I mean, that's fine categories to be.
Yeah, yeah. No.
And Yasmani Grandal, but he's very good.
Good company.
Good group there.
Soto's a really good shout for I.
Yes.
Because he's like, you don't think of him as a good eye guy because he just hits homers, but it's because he swings at pitches that are good to hit and doesn't swing at anything.
We're having a revelatory take on the podcast today. Juan Soto, good hitter.
Yes. Really? May I quote you on that?
Yes.
Please. Please put it in the paper.
Get Kate. Well, there's plenty of room on the Vientos hype train when you guys want to switch tracks. I'll be over here.
Is that yours?
That's my guy.
Yeah. He'll always be your guy.
He will.
He might not be very far away.
Nope. He's in my mind, he's better, so.
Like,
there's nothing that Beatty does that's better. Except for walk. Except for
I was going to say, except for not swinging at spin.
I also think there's like a full grade of barrel control that Batty probably has that Vientos doesn't, but we'll see.
His eye is much better. But everything else is comparable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Vientos has the benefit of being younger than a full year younger than Batty.
That's crazy.
True. Very true.
He has the benefit of being more advanced. That kind of all has gotten screwed up now at this point with COVID and everything like that that went on last year. And he did better at the same stops that they both have played. So basically, you know, GCL and Columbia, RIP. I mean, not Columbia, Kingsport, RIP, Kingsport.
I just think, like, we can't really take anything from Batty's previous experience just because it was like his draft year. So, I don't know.
I'm curious to see Batty this year. Like,
yeah.
I'm assuming he goes to Brooklyn, and I could see him kind of flying through that and getting out of there pretty quick if he hits.
Where do you think Vientos goes?
Probably Brooklyn.
I mean, yeah. I think you could make an argument, yeah, maybe double A. How I've been thinking about all of this is like...
No one knows.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard now.
You just fill in what you think last year would have looked like.
And then just crumple it up and throw it away, because it just, it's the whose line is it anyway? It just don't matter. All right, well, let's wrap things up with the Wilponery of the Week. And the Wilponery of the Week this week goes to Kristen Sinema, Democratic Senator from Arizona. And just like the Wilpons very often put their feet in their mouth and got bad press for saying and doing things that just really were not necessary. I don't know what Sinema was thinking, but she might be the most hated politician in America right now, even more so than Joe Manchin or Mitch McConnell.
More than Manchin. Let's pump the brakes on more than Mitch McConnell for a second there. Come on.
But, you know, on Friday, she voted no against raising the federal minimum wage to $15, literally with thumbs down and a curtsy. And then, if the optics were not bad enough, she literally brought chocolate cake in for her staffers. It was completely unrelated to things, but the let them eat cake part is, it does not look good for her.
Much more than the cake, I preferred the 2014 tweet that's making the rounds about the minimum wage being
too low.
Oops.
But I mean, she could have just voted no and that's the end of it, but I don't know what she was thinking. I mean, I really would like to see an interview with her just to see her state of mind. Why she thought that voting no with a big flourish would be a good idea. I don't know.
Yeah.
Wanting to interview someone for their state of mind is how I feel about every Wilpon thing for like 20 years now. Like, just sit down for like 3 hours and be like, why?
Why did you do this?
He couldn't run. Why did you play him?
And then we could actually tie this to the Mets, like actually to the Mets for a second. I saw somebody commented on like the picture of her, the video of her making that vote. And she had a bag. She had like a giant like gym bag. And it was a Lululemon gym bag. Retail value $118, whatever that, you know, for whatever it means. ESPN a couple of months ago had a an article where they were interviewing a bunch of minor league players and just talking about their financial situation with COVID and, you know, obviously not getting a lot, paid a lot even prior to that because minor leaguers made such shit wages. And one of the guys that they interviewed was Connor O'Neill, who is a Mets pitcher, relief pitcher. And he worked at Lululemon in California. And he'd regularly see well-off people dropping big money on stupid, overpriced clothes and bags like that. And who was the one asshole that he mentioned by name that was a complete dick?
Didn't he see? He said he saw Trevor Bauer, right? And then Bauer's like, nah, that wasn't me. But
yeah.
So of course it was fucking Trevor Bauer.
I forgot about that story. Jeez.
Yeah. Time has no meaning anymore.
Nope.
Nothing has meaning.
Eat Arby's.
Damn it, Ken beat me to it by half a second. Fuck.
And we found the title of the podcast.
Yes.
Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, or whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexofthequeens@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there if you like. I am at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.